Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Hi, everyone. And this is Living Vertical. And this program is A Taste of Ink Live, where we introduce authors from all over the world to our listeners. And we also talk about their writing journeys, the things that they've learned to share with other authors, and more. Today, we have Stephen Joseph. He's a first-generation American, son of a Holocaust survivor, masterful attorney, seasoned negotiator, engaging speaker, award-winning author. Stephen doesn't claim to know it all, but he has certainly mastered one thing, the art of effective crankiness. We're all cranky at some point, right? I'm not. Anyway, in his latest book, Cranky Superpowers, Life Lessons Learned from the Common Crankatosaurus Chronicles, Stephen dives into the quirky, unexpected, and absolutely normal aspects of life that get up under our skin with wit as quick as his marathon pace. Stephen serves up life wisdom that is as hilarious as it is profound. He invites readers to embrace the power of their inner crankatosaurus and use it to their advantage. Stephen Joseph is ready to bring a fresh, comedic, and deeply human perspective to our show this evening. Hi, Stephen. So how are you doing? It's been 2 years since I last talked to you.
Doing okay.
Yeah. We interviewed you.
It is exciting. I have my new book.
Good, good.
And I love the hardcover book. It has a nice feel.
Well, it would be nice that doing the second interview with you, we'll also kind of do a flashback of the A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness.
Yeah, and then I just came out this with April. So I have this in April.
Okay.
And I have like this book, you know, so
You've been busy. You've been really busy. Okay. You know, I did get a chance to read your book, and it was really interesting. Yeah, I read through it. I did read through it.
The latest book, this book?
I did read through that. Yeah. So it really was a great read. So I was going to say, one of my questions is, how is crankiness a superpower? And you say it is a trigger. So tell us something about that.
Well, crankiness is a power. I think I refer to that probably because of my own personal experiences. So I remember different ones. Back in December 87. Mm-hmm. I was around 240 pounds at 40 weight. And throughout that time, Christmas Eve, my girlfriend dumps me. Then New Year's Eve, my brand new car got stolen in front of my house. And a
wow.
few days later, I got fired from my job. So I lost my girl, my car, and my job.
Wow.
All within 10 days. And I didn't plan on it. But I said, I can't do this anymore. And I said, no matter how tired I was, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to work out. And when they first started, they put me on a life cycle for 3 minutes, level one. And
mm-hmm.
I barely could finish. Oh, and they died. And then I cut out fried foods and different things. And,
mm-hmm.
and by May, I was down to 165 and I was running and everything was easy. So that was like, I was a little cranky. You know, you lose your girl, your job, your car.
Right.
You get a little cranky. And, so that I discovered that superpower. And then my other story is that it's actually a writing journey. So I work for this company. This company gets bought out by another company.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an officer of the fire company. So they send a bunch of us to different places. I was sent to a castle in London to do for just an assessment, leadership assessment. It was like 2 days with a laptop, like looking at things. And I thought I did okay, but then I got my results back, and they said, they found, and these are run by psychologists, so we know it's like whatever they say happens to be, it has to be true. So on level of energy, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most energetic, 1 being the least, I was a 1. I was not even a couch potato. I was a potato that couldn't make the couch. And on creativity, also on a scale of 1 to 10, I only scored a 1. I couldn't think outside the box. I couldn't think inside the box. And maybe they wanted to put me in a box. And the thing was, the nursing home I was living in at the time, none of my aides ever told me about the, of my low energy and low creativity.
Mm.
So I thought, you know, hey, I'm going to work on this. Maybe I can get to a 2. I can move up to assisted living. They have all sorts of good activities there.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get 4, I could get my own kitchen. So
right.
I'm making that stuff up. But no,
right.
it really got me going. I started writing. I think I started writing on LinkedIn. I always was writing legal stuff. I wrote about 24 articles in 4 months. And I got some things published. And then I have the story, a kid's story. I wrote that. Got into the story was The Last Surviving Dinosaur, the Tyrannosaurus. And it was a story about the smallest dinosaur, but most dangerous dinosaur on the planet,
mm-hmm.
who kept cranking out, complaining, being cranky, and all the other dinosaurs couldn't take it anymore,
mm-hmm.
and they all dropped dead. But humans evolved from the smallest dinosaur, and that's why when you're born, you start crying, you know, so you come out cranky.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that kind of, you know, started my writing thing, but that was another cranky superpower moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was like being labeled something, being told something, having some difficult part,
mm-hmm.
and then coming out of that, creating, doing things, and actually like things. So
okay.
Those are my cranky superpower stories.
Right. So how do you, how do you recognize of your crankiness, because I'm like, I feel like I'm not ever cranky. I'm just. So how do you recognize? I'm sure all of us are cranky at some point. Maybe we don't recognize it, but.
Well, that's easy. So anyway, I do get cranky because, and I kind of explain this. I'm an attorney, and I explained that how law school is. The first year of law school, you learn how to get on people's nerves. The second year of law school, you learn how to rub people the wrong way. And by the third year of law school, you learn how to get underneath people's skin. And then when
okay.
you do all three at the same time, then you become a lawyer. And that lets you know why people don't like lawyers. That's
mm-hmm.
kind of why.
Mm-hmm.
But I surrounded myself with, I've been doing this for 37 years, And I surround myself with other lawyers. I manage lawyers. And if you keep yourself around those type of people, you get cranky quite often.
Oh, okay. Well, I bet. Well, I have clients on another, you know, job I do. And so when I was reading your book about the people that they just think they know everything and they're stubborn to learn anything new, even though the weird part is they're always asking. So I was like, yeah, I can identify that person for sure. I can recognize that person for sure. But I do know that it's really in the profession that I am outside of broadcasting that it's easy to get really, really cranky, very easy. But for me, I learned to get away from that so I can be like, okay, let's go with the next person.
Yeah. I know. And I tell you, today was a kind of day, how I describe it and what I do. It's as if I'm running a bakery and everybody gets to take a number. The only problem, everybody gets the same number. Oh, I'm one. No, I'm one. I'm one. And then, you know, having like 30 people say my turn at the same time.
So talk about some of the takeaways from your own life. I mean, how do, you know, as a professional and other professionals, how do they get it wrong?
I think one thing makes me crazy is I have to say that people get it wrong. And my own personal takeaway is that, you know, read all these books, self-help books. I call my book a help yourself book. I find self-help kind of passive, like self-serve ice cream. You make the ice cream, you don't really serve the stuff. The ice cream. You can suck a cup on you, you know, out comes the ice cream. But getting to that pet thing that gets me is when you have all these books talking about developing good habits. You have to have good habits. And I find the term habit was like getting a parking spot. You know, I got a parking spot, and it's temporary. You know, like I grew up in New York City, and they have alternate side parking rules and regulations. You have to move the car probably a few days later. It's not permanent. And I talk about normals. This is what I normally do, and you develop your normals. It's just you don't have to think about it. This is what I do, and you develop that to be a normal. It's like building a house. There's permanency there. So I happen to be a runner. There's a lot of mornings I think, but this is what I do, and I manage to get out, and I feel better doing it. So developing that attitude, that mental attitude, I think that really helps when you think about cranky superpower. That once you have that, then you could do almost anything.
Okay. All right. So how do you approach crankiness with humor and empathy?
Well, it's kind of, well, I like the empathy part. I think empathy is very, very important.
Okay.
And then it starts with, even in my first book, and I talk a little bit about in my second book, that, I created a name for it, a crankosaurus. We call it the common crankosaurus. And, you know, I say, people call it cold, the common cold. You have two or three a year, and the crankosaurus, you could have two or three in the morning alone. And understanding that this is just who we are, that we are all cranky at some time, then we get to have empathy for our partners, our friends, our work, our coworkers, everybody. You have that empathy. And if they have that cranky moment, then you pay attention. And then you start paying attention to your own cranky moment. That kind of helps. I talk in my first book, I talk about how, like kids, you know, say what you feel, say what you feel. And, you know, so use your words. So let's say I use an example. Let's say I'm angry and I can't. I'm very good saying I'm angry and angry and angry and angry and angry. And I would, and you would think, wow, Steve really knows how to say when he's angry, but he's a really angry guy.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to just, I just have a cramped source.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the angry person. I just have this moment in time cranky beats here that
mm-hmm.
everybody has, making it common.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, you know, I don't have to beat myself up. I don't other people don't have to look at me saying, oh, God, this angry person. I'm
mm-hmm.
just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm this sweet, lovable person, this sort of kid who's always there's this angry, this sweet, lovable kid who's
mm-hmm.
having a little difficulty at the moment. And
mm-hmm.
you could embrace that, too. Yeah, so it'll give them space.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I saw the part you had in there about couples and how they should sit down and make a list, and it was actually kind of funny in a way because I'm really not a cranky person, but my husband was. And the more he would get cranky, the more funny I would get. And
sure.
and he used to hate that because he would say, God, I hate it when you do that, you know. And then I would show empathy and say, oh, honey, I'm so sorry, you know. But really, I'm not. But but that's the kind of family I come from. It was never, we used to say this is a hard family to be in because
mm-hmm.
you weren't going to be allowed to be cranky. You weren't going to be allowed to be negative. And everybody had a joke. So I think as I got older, I kind of started saying, oh, it's okay to be cranky. Is that an okay way to think for some people?
It's just okay to be cranky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a joker as much as anybody. And I have to be careful. Sometimes I've had that situation with somebody, my partner, my wife,
mm-hmm.
that's cranky, and I'm trying to make a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not
work.
It doesn't work.
Right, right.
It doesn't work.
How can we embrace our crankiness? I mean, we talk about the common crankosaurus help us embrace crankiness. How can we really embrace our crankiness? Because it kind of feels kind of funky sometimes when you're kind of in the mood and you're trying to make yourself not be cranky.
Embrace. I think the way to embrace crankiness is to understand where it's coming from, and then once you understand where it's coming from, you can say yes. There's a line where you're cranky. You recognize that you're cranky,
mm-hmm.
but you don't take it into a place where it's not good. So,
mm-hmm.
In a lot of my writing, it actually helps me say yes to that. So. In my first book, I always talk about this stuff. The chapter is called Drive Me Crazy, Crankosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my thing. Well, still sometimes I have
mm-hmm.
to step back and breathe. But it's the line when somebody does something like my daughter's.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, it drives me crazy when and whatever she does. And then the next sentence in my head is I can't understand how you blah, 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 whatever. It's that I can't understand how.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like what makes me, drives me crazy.
Right.
They go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So the story I had, and it was great, I got to stop it and notice it.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter actually had to have her windshield replaced, and he goes to the windshield place. The only thing they do is replace windshield, and they replaced it wrong, so water was leaking into the car.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was thinking, yeah, it drives me crazy when you go to a place that one thing that we do, and they can't do it right.
Right.
I can't understand how they couldn't do the one thing that's the only thing they did.
Right.
So I developed this, that, I used that, and then I used the a restaurant scene where, you know, we're the customers, we're not getting served, the people next to us are getting served, they're getting the check already.
Mm-hmm.
We're still waiting to give our order, and they came in after us. So, you know, it drives me crazy when I'm here forever not being served. And mm-hmm. then I complained to the owner. The owner, he's very apologetic, but he's saying it drives me crazy when his waiter is not doing his job. I can't understand how he's not. So the owner's going crazy.
Right.
And then the waiter, who's been scolded, I always felt like I'm in the bathroom. And then I hear him, it drives me crazy when the owner directs me to do 20 things at once. I cannot understand how.
Right.
So everybody's having the same experience for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And again, noticing that it's still common mm-hmm. and how it affects other people. I'm still cranky. I still could go quietly crazy.
Right.
But I stop. And then I'm always reminded mm-hmm. of what I learned. And then I could laugh about it. Yes, mm-hmm. I still can't understand. Yes, it drives me crazy. But you know what? It happened. That's
right.
Life. That is how it's life. That there's going to be a lot of things like that
yeah.
I can't understand, that I could say drives me crazy, but I don't go crazy
mm-hmm.
because I have that understanding.
So tell me, how is a time-in more effective than a time-out? And I really kind of love that. I love the difference in your mom and dad. So.
Yeah, no, the funny thing is that I think a time-in is probably more effective because you learn to be patient
mm-hmm.
and you probably learn to suffer. So that story, when my daughter was young, I would put her in timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And all it was, like, my daughter's name is Dina. Dina, mm-hmm. go up to your room.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets to go up to her room and do whatever and just veg out and probably play on her computer or whatever. That's
right.
Great. I could go for that timeout all the
mm-hmm.
time. My time in was my mother going, do you feel like taking me to the beauty parlor? Yes. How did you know? you must have like ESP. I was just thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I grew up in the Bronx, and this is mm-hmm. like in the 70s. This is before I even had a car. So I would go with my mother on the 17 bus
mm-hmm.
for like 40 minutes to Allerton Avenue. And my mother, they put her up in the curlers and wash your hair and put one of those spaceship things on her head. It was a 3-hour kind of beauty parlor thing.
Right.
So the whole experience was about 5 hours of time in
right.
with my mother.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't fun. My friends were out playing football, you know, yes.
Right.
I felt like going to the beauty parlor, not playing my friends. Who will move back?
Uh-huh.
And you could go to the beauty parlor and just watch old women have their things on. That is fun. You know, so again, it's kind of like, I think I learned to be patient
mm-hmm.
like
okay.
From that. And I think patience
mm-hmm.
and saying this, like, yeah, it's not my best day. You know, it's not going to go down. It's I don't have to live anymore. I've done it. I went to the beauty parlor with my mom. That was it.
Mm-hmm. How is finding your own voice a cranky superpower?
So that was taken from one of my favorite chapters.
Cinderella. Yes. Uh-huh.
Cinderella cranky story.
Right.
And I love that because Cinderella, she goes online and orders fairy godmother, you know how you order things online.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairy godmother, she expects the carriage, the beautiful dress, the everything that Cinderella normally gets in the real Cinderella story.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
she comes in, the fairy godmother comes in with a megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
Cinderella goes, this is her. And then she starts kind of yelling at the megaphone. But the prince does hear her, and that's how they get together. So having a voice,
mm-hmm.
Just having your own voice, your voice, your unique voice. And in this story, it came from her cranky place. That she discovered she had a voice, and the voice is actually more important than the dress, the carriage, the slippers, and whatever her hair getting done. That was her cranky superpower. That's how she discovered.
Okay, so I did like that chapter, but I also like the one where you said the misery of cooking. So tell us about why is cooking the ultimate superpower?
Cooking, I like to cook.
Okay.
And because my mother was a fabulous cook, and I always liked to eat my mother's fabulous food that she prepared. So I took it upon myself to learn how to do some of her things and do things my own way as well. So I enjoy cooking. And I find that some days when I have like a really bad day, and then I could make this fabulous, you see the results of your labor, and it's beautiful and healthy and delicious. You can't be cranky after that.
So, right. You sure can't.
You can't. And a lot of people, you know, they don't think about it. They think about like what's easy. I talk about, I actually tell a story about this rabbi who was saying, what do we want to experience out of life? And everybody said pleasure. He goes, that's right. But what's the opposite of pleasure? And people said, it said pain. And he goes, that's not it. He said, the answer is comfort. And being comfortable, you know, you never get out of bed. I'm comfortable and bound to stay in bed all day. And you're not giving birth to your child with this very painful experience. You don't overcome obstacles. You don't win, you know, the championship. Anything that is extraordinary takes a lot of discomfort, actually. So that's where, you know, I talk about that, where, you know, you have to think about it in that sense, getting so comfortable and taking challenges and discovering that. And of course, there's those cranky moments through that, but you get a superpower at the end of the day if you ever focus, work on that, and have that mindset.
I like when you call it a superpower, some of the things to help you kind of get, you know, deal with your crankiness. And I know that we were talking about the ability to listen to each other. And it was kind of interesting because I know that, you know, how they ask you on a job, what is your best ability? But anyway, you know, it's interesting when you say that because I've seen people come in. I've worked customer service a lot when I first went to college. And people would come in and just be so angry. And I think it's more because they were cranky about how the day was going. I mean, you got to go through all the stuff when you're trying to register for college, you know. And I just, you know, when you said that, I was like, I never thought about that. But I think, you know, part of my superpower was I just stop and listen, you know. And usually when people realize you're listening, they kind of bring it down a little bit, you know. It just brings it down a little bit. So I really like that. But you say patience can be found when people begin to see you and embrace you. So when you're saying people see you and embrace you, tell me what that means to you.
Well, it's that you're being heard, that you exist, that and the story, that's another fun chapter. I have, and how that chapter came about is also funny. So Craig starts impatience, and this person has to go to the Institute for Severely Impatient People. The person's name is Harry DeGreer. And unfortunately, with that name, everybody would always call him Harry DeGreer. You know, if everyone's calling you Harry DeGreer, and keep correcting them, and they never call you, pronounce the name right, it just referred to as a Harry DeGreer, he became a very impatient person. So once he goes to the Institute, people call him by his real name, Harry DeGreer, and he finds that he's able to do all these different things, and he becomes more closer. The funny thing about that is there's the real person that I used to work for by the name of Harry Greer. And when I pulled home one day, my daughter asked me, who do you work for? I said, I work for Harry Greer. And my daughter, and it's so hysterical when you have a six-year-old, ask me, Daddy, why do you work for Harry Greer? So that's where, so I already had that funny little story in my head. So when I was thinking of this, I already have the characters in, like, laid out, and it was fun to go with that.
How long did it take you, I mean, from, let's say, you know, your first book and then this one. So how long did it take you to learn some of these ways to embrace your crankiness? I mean, you know, we were talking about law school. So from your first book to this book, how long did it take you to get to the place where, like, you know, knowing when to not sweat the small stuff, knowing when to just listen, knowing when to just be patient? How long did it actually take you?
Oh, wow. I'm still learning.
Okay. You're still learning?
I'm still learning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but with every chapter, it's a personal exploration. If I come up with something, and it really happens, things trigger me at work, and then it becomes a story that I get to think about it. So, and then something forms out of it. So I do a lot of negotiations, a lot of mediation. Mm-hmm. And so somebody likes to boast, this ain't my first rodeo. And that becomes a story where the person keeps falling off the horse, he goes to the rodeo, enters the rodeo competition, and by the 10th competition, with the most difficult bull, it stays on forever. And you get to say, well, take my first photo. Or another one, I was in the mediation, and the mediator says, you could argue so the cows come home. That became the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had another mediation coming for the first book, don't shoot me, I'm just a messenger. When I first thought about it, I did not want to shoot the messenger. And then I thought more about it. Here's this mediator who starts at $500 an hour.
Wow.
And I go, that's a pretty good job for a messenger.
Right.
$500 an hour. When I used to be a messenger, I only got minimum wage.
Okay.
So because he got paid so much, yes, I determined he took two shots. Not really, but.
Right. Okay. So, why do you believe if we embrace positivity and the healing of the planet, why do you think that these are some of the things that creativity that can bring people together?
I think creativity, that's more like with my kid book, in which I really encourage creativity. And in every kid book, and then I have a third snoo, I've snoo.
Mm-hmm.
To do those clues, lots of new clues in space, coming out with Clues in Space episode 2, the Zulus by Zach. And all of them is about being creative, being positive, and very important. In every book, there is a new museum.
Mm-hmm.
So they again, with creativity, they get to open up a museum. Last year becomes at the end, one was like kind of in the middle. So I want to encourage that and embrace that in a positive sense, because I watch the news, looking, you know, you hear stories, looking in that last book, here there's less scientists, less doctors, we're producing less of this, less of that, and just want to encourage. You know, no, we should encourage our creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So in this planet, in the book I talk about, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's not brain surgery, it's not rocket science. Mm-hmm. And usually they say it's simplest thing. You didn't make your bed. It's not rocket science. Or you didn't do the simplest thing. Why bother with anything more complicated? You know, you're a complete failure. Mm-hmm. So in the story on this planet Joodle, it actually was the rocket scientists and the brain surgeons who poo-poo everybody else when they would say, oh, I can do this. Well, it's not brain surgery, it's not rocket science. And the planet was left completely without any rocket scientists or brain surgeons. So they had to kidnap the Earth to try to solve that problem. But again, it's like encouraging that creativity and having that positive kind of attitude that we could fix things. I'm not a big fan of like zombie movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, so many things like another thing, end of the world, global warming, just going back. And I want to turn that upside down and say, hey, let's make things better. Let's
figure right.
this out. Let's encourage faith. Let's encourage exploration. And again, it comes to that cranky place where you're seeing, oh, this is going bad. That's going terrible. We're not seeing this. And, so wake up and then put things away. So that's mm-hmm. where that comes
from. Okay. Let's talk about the self-help crank as far as and why grown-ups need a good bedtime story.
I think people learn from stories. And this is actually kind of like personal experience. Like when I'm writing this book, I'm not a therapist, but I was married 20 years to a therapist. And then when we split up, I started with another therapist, but I'm still with her. So that was 33 years to a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in my first marriage, my wife, who tries to fix me, whatever, mm-hmm. I guess that's what it is,
mm-hmm.
She would give me like one self-help book to read by therapist, always mm-hmm. by some psychologist. And I would read the first chapter. Oh, that's pretty good. And then I read the second chapter. Oh, nice. Similar to the first chapter. Yeah. Fifth chapter. It turns out they're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the greatest parts of it with their patients. This patient had a good outcome, that patient had a good outcome. But it's the same thought. It didn't go to different areas. So you don't really take it in. Okay, that's good. You think about that one thought and it stays a little bit in you. But it doesn't stay. And then I'm writing books where I really want you to think, I really want you to help yourself,
mm-hmm.
but I find that like a story that you could read and actually crack up and find it funny, or
mm-hmm.
you know, the art of living sort of thing, that it takes the pressure off. So if I'm reading a self-help book and I'm having this problem, you might feel like, oh, I have to fix myself. Pressure. I'm reading. I have to get this right. The instruction manual to living, if I just have to follow the instruction manual in this self-help book, I'll get it. And it's work. It's work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of getting cranky.
Mm-hmm.
Get cranky. So my books are about like thinking about how to do things. But I'm doing the operation. You don't even know you're being operated on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like having so much fun that you get to crack up. And one of my favorite chapters is Spinning Your Wheel Crankosaurus, which I revere the Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
And they go to the wizard, and when they're the wizard is offering them tchotchkes. Oh, here's this little plastic watch or a clock, you know, and they call you spinning my wheel, you know,
mm-hmm.
but they already had it. And it was actually that cranky moment
mm-hmm.
that they finally realized that they have it, in particular the line, he gets to meet the wizard at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun. But again, he already had that courage.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that cranky moment that he finally discovered that he had the code. So that's again, it's like you're reading a story, you're being entertained.
Right.
But you're kind of thinking, yeah, that's how you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we go through that period, we think we're spinning our wheel, we're
mm-hmm.
getting nowhere, when in fact, by sometimes spinning your wheel, thinking you're getting nowhere, you're getting some, and pressing back point on somebody again, they're going to be entertained by reading the book and not even mm-hmm. know it, but they know get it. So that's, again, that's why I talk about, bedtime stories sometimes. Not just for kids, it's
mm-hmm.
for adults as well. We want to be entertained.
Right, right. Is there a difference between, let's say, the degree of crankiness from, let's say, starting in your 30s till you get to, like, your 70s? Does it get a little bit harder to, you know, pull out that superpower and be more effective?
Well, I'm 62.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm very grateful that I'm youthful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think for me, I find both life experiences as taught me a lot.
So
when things aren't going so well, I know that I just have to stay focused, just look ahead at what. Think of like, oh, this is it. Life, like, throw in a towel sort of
mm-hmm.
Attitude where it's not that because you don't know what tomorrow brings.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
We're just staying focused. You know, how many times I have a bad day for no reason whatsoever. Just
mm-hmm.
great. And then you wake up the next day, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another day, and I'll just go back to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I think it happens, at least for me, my experience being older, just living life taught me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it shows in the book that, it's
mm-hmm.
really about my own experiences and then putting it into some stories mm-hmm. and creating that. To give guidance to people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They can figure it out on their own.
Okay. So since the first time I asked you this a couple of years ago, we usually ask our authors if they were to give some advice to somebody that's up and coming writer. And so we've had from the first book to this book, has there anything new you've learned as a writer?
Well, I don't know if it's something I've learned. I've gotten better at it.
Mm-hmm.
My writing is a lot like it's just like negotiate. And I could tell you when I first started out doing what I do, I have a case, I would just pour over everything and know every little detail, every little nook, cranny, period, comma, exclamation point. I would know everything. And now it's like I'm not focused on that. I need
mm-hmm.
the hooks.
Mm-hmm.
I need the hooks that tell a story that falls within what I want to convey.
Mm-hmm.
So then I get a concept and then characters appear. And then,
mm-hmm.
I do with those characters, and sometimes they just start talking to me, and I'm just trying
mm-hmm.
to watch. that's the most fun. And,
mm-hmm.
And then when you have a story, when you have the story in your head, but you don't have the whole story,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to find out how it's going to end,
right.
That's the exciting part, that you want to write it because you want to find out how it went.
Right. Okay.
So I think that's for the writers to think about.
Right. It's funny you said that because I'm mentoring someone right now. It's, they're at that last chapter. So it's just interesting. So anyway, So tell me about your children's book, the Snoodles series. Tell me a little bit about that.
So there's Snoodles, Goodles, Snoodles, lots more Snoodles. Snoodles in space.
Okay.
Snoodles, Noodles, Snoodles, and One Happy Funeral.
Uh-huh.
So in my books, the first book, people are cranky because everybody was driving around cars, the Krautmobile, mm-hmm. which was run on sauerkraut. They were stinky.
Okay.
Not people cranky.
Mm-hmm.
And then Herbie Snoodleman invented the snoodle with a bunch of noodles. And you just go to the ramenoli and fill it up the car with noodles. And off you go. And you, when you come home, you can press the button and get a bowl of noodles. So, and you smell mm-hmm. delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains in the second book, he actually was a brain surgeon
mm-hmm.
prior to inventing the snoodle. But he always then he realized that when he uses his brain, he's using his noodle.
Mm-hmm.
And because our brains are just filled with noodles, that's how we discovered that if we just use that technology for a cause,
mm-hmm.
then we would create the ultimate happiness. So there's a lot of noodles stuff. There are things, fun words with noodles. Noodles. I'm very excited about the next book. First of all, I have an amazing illustrator, and he loves doing it, and I'll do it for free. You know, and after I wrote the New York and States book, he said, I have to start writing a third one.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm going to go gangsta on you. You know? That's bothering me. And I tell him I can't write a book just because all my books, as funny as they are, I want my books to be funny and particular.
Right.
They have to have a message, have to be about something.
Right.
And I like it to flow into what we call the kind of sex.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so excited about my next book because, again, I just had an idea. I was thinking of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And that story, what's amazing about that story, Charlie is like this nice boy who gets the chocolate factory. And then you have all these other kids that pick up things that they shouldn't do, and they turn out so well.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wow, you know, when I see the movie, it was a big media.
Mm-hmm.
All the TV stations and newspaper reporters, and these kids must have been shamed
mm-hmm.
and ridiculed. And then it was like traumatic for them. It was like terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the story that I make them the heroes. So I have Frippy Puppy Poodle and Whippy Wumpy Woodle. Frippy Puppy Poodle has a 50 Whippy Papa Doodle, and
mm-hmm.
he pops until he pops. Whatever. And Whippy Wumpy Woodle has a squizzly, squizzly slime a doodle,
mm-hmm.
which turns into a bucket of slime. So kids like, you're a slime ball. You know, just the new kids. But mm-hmm. they end up saving the planet.
Okay.
So,
all right.
And their father was Grumpy Briny Grudelman. He had invented the Grudel, it runs on gruel.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Kind of squish and make the goes into the water.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a plot to make everybody into willy nilly.
Okay. Okay.
So it's a lot of fun.
Sounds fun.
But I love this. The end of the story in the second book. The two kids. Get to mm-hmm. the city for saving the planet. And again, these two kids get to the city. But for all the other kids, their class are there to cheer them on and applaud them. And they're heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they were, initially, they were like shamed. So again,
mm-hmm.
like that shaming thing where I think kids get to be mean and it's unfortunate. But hey, never good out. And they get an aquadoodle aquarium, whatever. So.
Okay.
So that's fostered. That's their museum. Because
all right.
Clean all the oceans and everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So do you have any events coming up?
I am speaking this Saturday at the Book Fest. I'm opening up the Book Fest with a keynote speech that I'm very honored.
All right.
To do. And then that's the next thing. And then I guess there's a few other interviews and different things to line up. I have to figure that out.
Right.
And of course, working my illustrator is getting close to finishing the next book. So that's exciting.
Wow, I bet.
And then just working on all my publicity after the stuff is not as fun, like just trying to, get the word out on Cranky Secret Pal. So far it's been well received. I'm very excited.
Great.
It's great when people get it. They get it. Exactly what I wanted. And it's been across the board. Everyone.
Okay.
That's the best thing.
Great. And so how can our readers find you?
Just come to Hoboken. I'll have dinner for you. seriously, obviously, that's how you find me.
Right.
And I will cook you dinner. So, it's going to be really, really good.
All right.
But if you're not coming for dinner, you just want to go online, you can find me at stephencaresofauthor.com.
Okay, great, great.
That's the best place. Fun blog. An award-winning blog, so they'll have fun being cranky films in my blog, and all the books are there. You can order any of the books through my website.
It really is a fun website, so definitely we'll make sure we give everyone that address. And thank you again for interviewing with us. Appreciate you coming again. We're going to have you come and do something on the children's books.
Definitely.
So I think that would be really fun. So, but I appreciate you. Thank you again. I appreciate embracing my crankiness and definitely for my readers out there, we will be giving away two of your books. So definitely we'll be doing that. And it's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. So you got anything else you want to tell us before we leave?
Just embrace the crankiness and it's a lot of fun.
I might get a couple of your books and keep them in my car just in case I want to give it to somebody that needs to learn to embrace their crankiness. Take care, Stephen. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Ellen Kay, and how do you panda? I love Panda Express, and this year, Panda is celebrating its 40th anniversary. To celebrate, they're offering a sweet new treat, an apple pie roll. It's an egg roll with apple pie filling tossed in cinnamon sugar. Apple pie roll is Panda's American Chinese twist on a classic apple pie. It's made with juicy apples and fall spices in a crispy roll pastry. However you panda, order yours today. Visit PandaExpress.com or download the app to find a location near you.
It's time to take care of yourself and enjoy life again. CBD American Shaman has a full line of hemp-derived products to help you experience the fullness of life. Whether it's a better night's sleep, relief from worries and tension, or just having fun, consultants at CBD American Shaman will guide you on your journey. Visit FindCBDNow.com for a location near you. FindCBDNow.com. CBD American Shaman. Life is better with the feather.